host a morning talk show at radio station WCMY in Ottawa, Illinois. Can you describe some of the new ways that WCMY is delivering content to your audience?
We've been taking advantage of, for some time now, the ability to be able to stream the station 24/7 on the station's website. And even though it's new technology, I refer to it as the traditional new method of distributing our radio station, in addition to the original method of a tower and a ground system and a directional array and the transmitter and everything. But in addition now to the audio stream, we also are now venturing into the on-demand side of making our programming elements available to listeners. Our major local newscasts that are prepared throughout the day are available on the station's website for the listeners to access at their leisure. They can also access the individual stories, both in a script form and also in an audio form where the script is delivered by the announcer and the sound bites are included. And then we also take our long-form programming, our long-form local programming elements, and when we do have interviews, or sometimes we'll even get a lively open phone conversation going on a particular topic, and we'll pull those out of the audio file and prepare those for an on-demand podcast as well. And I think that's where a lot of what we do may be going down the road. I think the on-demand podcast and that instant availability when the listener wants it is going to be really the trend for the future.
Do you think it's having an effect on, you know, the amount of people who are listening to the station? I mean, do you think you're getting an increase in audience because of this podcasting feature?
You know, as I track the numbers for the hits to the website, and the beauty about the internet is that it's got, you know, tons of detail, more detail than we could ever hope to get from Arbitron, even with the PPM that's in place now. But we really can tell who is going where and when. And we've even experimented with setting up some focus groups, accessing people's URLs and IP addresses, and going back and saying, you know, why did you go to this page? Why are you looking at it? And I think that's really going to help us as far as having some empirical evidence of what people are going to be looking for. As I look at the numbers, if you will, there's still that same 97 or 98% of the world that sometime during the week turns to terrestrial radio. I don't think that's going to change in the near future.
Okay, let's talk about the changes that are probably going to take place in the car radio over the next 5 to 10 years. I mean, what kinds of things do you think that that a consumer of radio can expect to see?
I think as the internet expands its ability to be portable, and we're in the beginning stages of it now with the MP3 connections that are in the newer car radio, so that you've got the plug-in right there at the dashboard. And I do know some people who do that, and they are listening to internet radio as they drive coast to coast, and maybe they'll carry their local station with them for a good part of the way. I think that's one element in the first baby step in this whole process. And as the reliability for broadband increases, that's really going to be the critical thing. There are still just a lot of pockets in the country where internet access, period, is spotty, and the broadband is almost non-existent. I think that'll be the real driving force as to where this heads in the next decade or so, is the availability of broadband coast to coast.
Okay, and you know, related to that question, what's going to happen to AM radio in the next 20 years? I mean, with all these different delivery methods of the signal, or I guess of the content, what's going to happen with the tower?
I've got to wonder if we're not going to see in the next few years something that would be similar to what happened in the early days of radio, pre-FCC, when the radio industry was regulated by a small office in the Commerce Department, and anybody could just apply for a radio license and get it granted. And then as more stations started to get on the air into the late 20s and early 1930s, the need became there and evident to do some more regulation, both of a technical nature and from an ownership basis. And then in the early 1940s, just before World War II, was what's called the Great Frequency Shift, where, again, the radio dial was redesigned, if you will. And I think we may see that happen again, just to make AM as viable as possible and keep it as competitive as possible with FM, considering signal limitations and that kind of thing. Not unlike what's just been done with television and the shift to digital and high definition.
You know, I've set some interviews up with you before with some of my clients, and I guess what I'm wondering is, you know, just for the people who listen to this podcast, what kinds of tips can you give a public relations pro, you know, to make your job easier and work with you?
Prep material has always been supreme to me. Tell me what the subject is. Tell me about the person I'll be talking with. Their background, and then a detailed explanation of just exactly what the issue is that we'll be discussing. And prep questions are certainly helpful. You know, they can or don't necessarily have to be used verbatim, but for somebody like me who may conduct five or six conversations in one show, and trying to keep my mind focused on that 7, 8, 10-minute conversation, the more detailed information I've got, the better.
Are you optimistic about the future of radio?
Oh, I'm very optimistic about the future of radio. I think it's got tremendous opportunity with all the high tech out there. And the ability to even more deeply now communicate one-on-one. It's always been a very intimate medium to begin with, and I think with the Internet it's even that much more intimate because really with the Internet now, the person at the microphone can literally, you know, touch one-on-one with each listener.
I can tell you that definitively it's shocking even to look at a web page for a radio station today versus looking at what it used to look like a year and a half ago or 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, when we first got into it, you know, we looked at it as a big promotional piece for the radio station. And it is, to some extent, we've got one station in our company. If you want to go look at their website, it's wjbdradio.com. They're down in southern Illinois in a little pocket where there is no newspaper internet activity at all, even though they're surrounded by three dailies. And they're the only real radio in that part of the state down there. They're about 70 miles east of St. Louis. And they really are the portal for the community.
So,
and I contrast that with the situation we're in here, where we've got two very active dailies in the market, three very active locally oriented AM full service stations, and now an online newspaper.
Huh.
And so everybody's fighting for content, fighting for advertising, and the monetization issue, I don't know where that's going to go. We're still trying to figure out how to sell the thing.
But it's interesting, you just mentioned that there's a particular market where you have this station where there isn't a newspaper that's really serving that listening area.
Mm-hmm.
And I would expect that as we hear about more and more daily newspapers going out of business, that maybe this is an area, at least somewhat of a growth area, for radio stations to fill the void and to provide, you know, news gathering.
Yeah. I think we're still going to be able to play up big time the fact that radio is free. I think we'll be able to take advantage of the fact that, because I read about the Boston Globe, they're going to go to subscription service if you want to see the Boston Globe online. And I think that's where print's going to go. We've got one, the online newspaper that's been established here now for about 3 years, and they've been doing pretty well. You can go look at a little bit of it online, but you have to be a subscriber to get it. Now, they also do a print edition that they sell. But the other two local newspapers, one is completely out there for anybody to look at any time. It's cost them a lot of money in lost subscriptions. The other one, you don't have to have a subscription, but you've got to join, so to speak.
One other aspect is that I think, you know, you think about the, you know, the base of what radio is, and it's really multimedia content. And I think that it was a multimedia medium before the idea of multimedia really came up, as far as, you know, with internet and everything. And maybe the lesson here is that because radio has so much content that can transfer very well to the internet, maybe they do have that advantage. You know, I mean, the fact that, in other words, it's a stretch for a newspaper to produce multimedia content, but it's not a stretch for a radio station that already has been doing that for, you know, 50 years.
Yeah, I know, because we have this discussion a lot in the office. What are we going to do with our digital product? But also keeping in mind the terrestrial product. And we do look around at what's on the web. And I notice newspapers aren't starting audio services on their website. They're still sticking with more of the traditional newspaper kind of thing. They are getting into some video, but it's very rudimentary when you compare it to the local television station that's already got video on their website. And I think it is more of a natural step for radio to move toward the multimedia angle, as opposed to our friends who are in the print business.